Welcome. The matter scheduled now for oral argument by Interactive Television is case number A180605, State of Minnesota versus Tracy Bailey. Council, you'll each have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you choose to use that time for rebuttal. The way our electronics work is that we can see only who is speaking. So if please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument for the benefit of our audio recording. But if you could now, even before we begin, if both of you could indicate your presence just so that we can get a visual of both of you. We're seeing one of you, so please introduce yourselves.
Your Honor, Ben Lindstrom, Cass County Attorney. Okay.
And I'm Gina Schultz, Assistant State Public Defender.
All right, Mr. Lindstrom, if you could maybe say a few more words just so we can make sure that the camera will switch over to you.
Yes, sir. I guess in terms of words, we're up here in Walker, Minnesota.
This is like beginning a speech. You just have to tell a joke or two to keep the audience happy.
Yeah.
All right, we can see you now. So we can turn to the appellant's argument at this time, whenever you're ready to proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Gina Schultz, Assistant State Public Defender, and I represent Tracy Bailey, the appellant in this matter. The Supreme Court has made it clear that it's a rare case indeed that would warrant reversal on a refusal to depart. But the court has also made it clear that rare is not never, and the door is not closed for these kinds of appeals. This is that kind of rare case, and that's for three reasons. The first is just the sheer volume and kind of evidence that Bailey presented at sentencing. This isn't one woman saying, "I've changed, Judge, trust me." She testified on her own behalf, but she also presented testimony from her agent who said, yes, this woman is particularly amenable to supervision. I've supervised her over the last year, and that's my conclusion. She's complied with every aspect of supervision. She's had breathalyzers 3 times a day over the past year, and they've all been negative. She's complied with her mental health, was seeking mental health treatment. She's been a model supervisee. She also presented testimony from her adult daughter, who's known her whole life and who has been a witness to the transformation that happened after she got an accurate mental health diagnosis. And finally, she presented evidence from her AA sponsor, who's intimately familiar with her recovery and with all the success she'd had over the last year.
Is the district court allowed?
And then finally, she presented.
Is the district court allowed to consider, or are we, in the absence of the district court's express consideration, allowed to consider the fact that there were previous periods of significant length where your client at least avoided being charged or convicted with drunk driving in relationship to the argument or the evidence that she's now gone a year without having relapsed?
Sure, I think the court can consider that. It's part of the record. It's in the PSI and, you know, is discussed at a, you know, on a superficial level at sentencing. But it doesn't change the fact that when she got this mental health diagnosis, this is clearly an inflection point. And it's not just that she's avoided, you know, driving while intoxicated for a year. It wasn't just that. Her daughter has said that this is a huge change in her. She's always had mental health issues, but when she got this diagnosis, everything fell into place. Things changed. She started spending time with her family. She got the mental health care that she needed. She got a sponsor with AA. She started going to meetings. She wasn't using alcohol at all, not just avoiding, you know, convictions of a new DWI conviction.
Ms. Schultz,
this is different.
It seems the district court acknowledged those positive things, but then said, I don't agree that it meets the legal standard of particular amenability to probation. What standard of review do we apply to that determination?
Well, Your Honor, that aspect, I say, is reviewed de novo. The judge's decision is abuse of discretion, but whether or not particular amenability to probation is a legal determination. And that's what the district court said it was. It said this is a legal standard, and you don't meet that legal standard. And as I argued in my brief, that's wrong. The district court got that wrong.
So if the district court if the district court is wrong about that, what is the remedy?
Well, this court does have authority to impose a stay sentence, which is what I asked for, what we asked for in the brief. But the court also has authority to reverse and remand, send back to the district court for consideration, for further consideration, once they've been corrected on this point of law. But I think here, given how clear the evidence is that she is particularly amenable for supervision, I think a full reversal and imposition of a state sentence is the most appropriate remedy.
When is the district court required to depart downward dispositionally? What's the standard for? What's the standard for when the district court is required to do so?
Well, I think under the law, the district court is never required. But that doesn't mean that there can't be an abuse of discretion. And I think the law is clear on that.
So if the district court is not required to depart downward, even if your client is particularly amenable to probation, even if we agreed with assuming we agree with your argument as to the district court's legal determination, why would we make the decision as to probation rather than, and the departure motion, rather than remanding to the district court to determine what the district court would do in its discretion with that legal determination?
Well, if your honors think that is the best approach, I think that is certainly an appropriate disposition. But it is our position that looking at this record and seeing that the district court did credit all of this evidence and said, you know, I believe you. I believe everyone who testified for you, but you just don't meet this legal standard.
What is it?
The court can recognize. I'm sorry, can you repeat your question?
That's okay. It's hard with the interactive. There's a little bit of a time lapse. So it seems to me that the district court was acknowledging that all of this may have made your client amenable to probation. That is, it's your client suitable. It seems to fit the category, the qualifications for probation. What is it in this record that would meet the particular amenability standard that the Supreme Court is now requiring of all of these cases? Why is your client especially amenable, which I tend to read that as meaning that incarceration would be inappropriate, not just that probation would be appropriate?
I think I have a two-part answer to that. First is, again, just going back to the sheer volume of evidence that she did present from diverse sources in her life that can really speak to her amenability, and in particular, her agent, who said, who is the professional in this area who supervises people? And she says, yes, in my opinion, this woman is particularly amenable. But I think the second answer to that is something I covered in my brief, which is that she's particularly unamenable to correction and incarceration. Ms. Bailey's success has been very dependent on these structures of supports, of mental health medication and weekly meetings with their therapist, with their AA sponsor, going to these groups. And as the diagnostic assessment says, her prognosis is very positive unless those structures were disrupted for any reason, including incarceration. And as she testified at sentencing, she goes to prison, she can't take her medications. She's only going to get her bipolar med and not the others. And so
I was curious about that. I mean, is the record well developed on that? And if so, why is that so that she will not? I mean, it seems to me the state has an obligation to provide the necessary medical care to a person who's in prison. I mean, why? Can you tell me more about that?
Sure. The record is not entirely clear in that Ms. Bailey. The two pieces of evidence we have is Ms. Bailey testifies that she had been working with a doctor to help her figure out what kind of medication she would be allowed to have in prison, and that she was worried about that because she couldn't have most of them. And then the other piece is this diagnostic assessment that says her prognosis is positive unless these supports were interrupted for any reason, including incarceration. But prisons do have their formularies, and they don't allow any kind of medication you'd be able to to get out in the community. So I think that is a big concern here for Ms. Bailey. You know, on the issue of whether she meets this standard of particular amenability, I want to point the court to three cases, two that I cited extensively in my brief, Malinsky and Hennessy. And those are both cases where the appellant had a pretty extensive criminal record that did not disqualify them for a dispositional departure. In Malinsky, the appellant had six prior felonies and a bunch of misdemeanors. And in Hennessy, the appellant had a long history of nonviolent offenses. And then I also want to point to a case that I cited in my brief, State v. Hinnom, to show that this would not be without precedent to reverse this decision and impose another sentence, even though the sentence imposed was in the presumptive range. And in State v. Hinnom, it was a durational departure. The appellant appealed from district court's refusal of a durational departure. And the Minnesota Supreme Court looked at it and said, yeah, there were mitigating factors here. This person, even though they got a sentence in the presumptive range, it should have been lower. And changed it from 103 months to 54 because of, and you know, this is a durational departure, so they're different factors, but it's definitely an analogous context. So even though, you know, there are a lot of cases, you know, just affirming the district court's exercise of its discretion in these kinds of situations, but there are these rare circumstances, and Ms. Bailey's is one of them. Let's see. Unless the court has
I'm sorry, Ms. Schultz. Is it your view of the record that the district court did exercise its discretion and then decided in its discretion not to depart?
It is not my view of the record, in particular because, I mean, if the district court has an erroneous view of the law and thinks that, you know, they can't grant a dispositional departure here, she doesn't meet the legal standard, then I don't think we can meaningfully say that the district court fully exercised its discretion, because I had an erroneous view of the limitations on that discretion.
What's the most compelling case you were able to find to show that circumstances like this essentially require a district court to depart dispositionally?
I don't have a case that says that a district court would be required. I do have plenty of cases that say, first of all, I have plenty of cases that say, you know, defendants under these kinds of circumstances do meet the standard for particular amenability. I also have cases, I have Hinnom saying that, like, sometimes there really is an abuse of discretion here, and the appellate courts can look at the record and say, this sentence isn't justified by the facts because there are these mitigating factors that the district court should have paid enough attention to actually impose this departure. So I completely agree with you that the law is not such that there is a requirement to depart under certain circumstances, and certainly it's clear that if there's only one mitigating factor, there's certainly no requirement. But the law is also clear that these decisions can be reviewed for abuse of discretion. And I think there is an abuse of discretion here. So unless the court has any other questions for me, I think I've gotten through my argument.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz.
So
you will have an additional 5 minutes of rebuttal time.
Okay, thank you. I would just say, based on the foregoing reasons, Ms. Bailey asked this court to reverse and remand for to impose a state sentence. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for the state.
Thank you. May it please the court. Ben Lindstrom, Cass County Attorney, on behalf of the state. I want to start by just kind of acknowledging that, and I acknowledge this at Ms. Bailey's sentencing hearing, that she does appear to be a nice person. She comes off as polite, cordial, and it is tough for me to come before the court on occasions like these and kind of have to ignore some of the human aspects of these situations and ask that the objective guidelines be imposed. The question really before the court is whether this record, which the district court believed all of the testimony as a matter of law, requires a finding of particular amenability. And I would submit to the court that it does not. And I think the biggest thing that is an impediment to that particular finding would be Ms. Bailey's history. And that was noted in the pre-sentence investigation. And that did cite back to her first conviction for DWI back in 2001. It outlined her history of probation violations and her history of subsequent DWIs. And so basically it demonstrated that over the course of 16 years or so, Ms. Bailey was either on supervision or incarcerated for, you know, all but just a handful of years for a DWI offense. It also showed that she got this new DWI while on conditional release for her prior DWI. You know, so basically Ms. Bailey had 16 years or so of supervision and continued to get DWIs. And I think that is the crux of the district court's finding in terms of why there isn't particular amenability in this case. And if the court looks at the rare case that was cited by counsel, that State v. Henham, I would submit that the facts in that are pretty egregious. You have an extreme case, I would say domestic abuse. There was, I think, a notation to a six-month-old child being grabbed and manhandled. And so I would say that that presents an extreme set of facts that are way different than what we have here. I mean, certainly I want to commend Ms. Bailey for taking the steps she did take in the interim while her case was pending. I don't want to discount that. I just want to stress that it's not the same as that rare case in State v. Henham. Ultimately, I'm asking the court to affirm the district court's finding that there was not particular amenability. So, thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for Ms. Bailey, any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess I would just like to point out that those human factors are exactly why dispositional departures exist in the first place. That's why we have discretion within the sentencing guidelines, because sometimes this function of criminal history versus severity of the offense just doesn't tell the whole story. And that's the case here with Ms. Bailey. She does have this history, and it's troubling and problematic. But there's also this intervening event, which is getting an accurate mental health diagnosis and being able to get appropriate treatment for that. And that was a real inflection point in her life. And it's not just about granting clemency for the mistakes of her past, even though I think that is also appropriate, but it also means that the predictive value of her past with alcohol and her and driving-related alcohol-related driving offenses is just not as powerful as it is in the typical case. Because we only have a year, you know, compared to her 47 years of being alive, but we have a year where we've seen how she can be when she has these supports in place. And she was a model supervisee. She did everything that was expected of her, tested 3 times a day. She was on house arrest, spent time with her family, 3 AA meetings a week. She did great. And that's, I would submit, has much more predictive value in terms of both particular amenability to supervision and also public safety than her history with untreated mental illness. You know, she at sentencing, she described her symptoms. She said, you know, that she would have these deep, dark depressions, and then they'd be followed by days of such extreme highs where she couldn't stop moving, she couldn't eat, you know, and she used alcohol to self-medicate, and that became a problem for her for a very long time. And she dug herself into a really deep hole. But with this diagnosis, she was able to get out of it. And I think that matters. So unless the court has any other questions for me, that's what I have for rebuttal.
Well, thank you. And thank you to both counsel for your briefing and for your oral argument. and especially for the fact that you mixed into your legal arguments what appeared to be, and what I'm sure was, a very sincere understanding of the human element in this case, which sometimes gets lost on lawyers, but we appreciate your argument today. The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. We are in recess.
Thank you.